810-3380.
Hi, I'm Nikki Gallucci. Welcome to Page to Pantry. Please pull up a chair and join us in the family room as we share great conversation on the latest nutrition and health information, great recipes, and practical support to help us on the path of good nutrition and a fit lifestyle. Remember, this is not a lecture, it's a dialogue, and that means your voice is needed.
Hey everybody, how are you? Are you enjoying my voice so Demi Moore? You know how that gets every year when everybody's getting sick and I don't get sick, but I have this husky voice going? This is the year that I get discovered when Demi is like too busy to do a movie and this director out there says, oh, this woman is the only one with the voice. So enjoy my voice. I'm going to be, totally milking it. What are you complaining about? If Beyonce did this, you'd totally like reward her with a Grammy. Okay. Don't complain. So anyway, we have a great show for you today. I missed you guys desperately last week. How many people did not go shopping because the funds are not there? Okay. Same as me. Okay. And I thought, well, gee, I should have been in the studio with you guys and everything. And well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, and of course my heart is grown fonder, if that is even possible. So many of you wrote me still. That was so exciting. I want to say hello to everybody who wrote me, making sure I wasn't too lonely. And a lot of you said, Nikki, we want you to stay on this particular series that you're going on, you know, having relationships with screwed up people, what to do. I know a lot of you were hanging out with the quote unquote perpetrators over this Thanksgiving holiday, and a lot of you are terrified that over Christmas and New Year, etc., you're going to have to confront some of the difficult people in your lives. Well, one of the things that was really exciting or challenging, whichever way you want to look at it, is that every time I got another email, it was talking about issues that were more psychiatric based. You know, you heard Wendy, one of our listeners who called in, talk about having a relationship first with someone who was a narcissist and then with someone who was borderline. And then I found out that she was talking about borderline personality disorder. And it turns out that so many of you out there actually have these relationships with people who have borderline personality disorder. What on the face of the planet is borderline personality disorder, and how do you deal with it? I want to welcome Wendy. Wendy, is it Wendy Talaro?
Talaro.
Wendy Talaro. Wendy, you just are phenomenal. Wendy is one of the listeners who wrote me these different emails, and you know, this is what Page to Pantry is about. It's real. It's us really getting to the bottom of our issues and having the support and talking to each other and pulling each other along with the, you know, support that we need and the strength we need to get through stuff. So I said, Wendy, you're coming on the show. Well, in Wendy's emails, she kept writing about AJ Mahari. This author, AJ Mahari, said this, and AJ Mahari said that. I said, well, let's have AJ Mahari on as well. This is Page to Pantry. In case you are wondering, you are on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara 90.7 FM, San Diego, and all over the World Wide Web. Hey, hold on a minute. You feel it? Streaming live. Ooh, at KPFK.org. Hey, I've got everybody. The crew is on. I have D'Angelo Jones with my favorite cap on. I saw Christine Blasdale on there in my favorite new person on the, oh, I have to describe her to you. You have to spell your name for me so I can tell everybody. It's just amazing. Maya is on. Do not write me unless you have a modeling job for Maya. That's the only other thing that she will do outside of this show, and she's well qualified for that. I want to say hi to JK, Jennifer Kaiser. I want to say hi to everybody out there, Robbie and everyone. We have an exciting show today. We're going to delve into everything. It might be uncomfortable, but there is no better place to delve into it than on Page to Pantry. Hey, are you tired of the bad news? You know, I was listening to the show on Darfur. I was listening, you know, to issues about the economy. I was listening to, you know, the problems with the automakers and this and that and the other. And it just seems like everywhere you turn, there's a situation going on. But from your emails, we have situations right at home. We don't have to listen to the news to understand trouble on a real basis, trouble that permeates our cells and our bodies. And, you know, there's no better time than a hug. Guess what? This hug business that we do on Page to Pantry, I told you, is scientifically Okay? Scientifically correct. Here's the study by the British Medical Journal. Scientists from Harvard University and UC San Diego showed that happiness spreads readily through social networks of family members, friends, and neighbors. Quick trip through this whole research. All right, so here you are. What are your chances of being much happier if the following people are happy? If your sibling is happy, you're 14% more likely to be happy. If your spouse is happy, 8%. Dig this. If your next door neighbor is happy, 34%. You are 34% likelier to be happier. Oh my goodness. If your immediate friend or family is happy, you are 15.3% more likely to be happier. If your friend, that's where I come in, dearest. If your friend who is half a mile or less away is happier, you are 42% more likely to be happy. P2P posse, can I get an oh yeah? That means, hey, look, I'm just a heartbeat away. Look me in the radio, okay? This is the real deal. If I'm happier, you have a 42% chance of being happier regardless of what your spouse is doing, regardless of what your sibling is doing. If your sibling is over 1 mile and happier, 0%. Could this be real? If your friend is 2 miles away, 22% more of a chance that you're happier. This is amazing. The friendship thing is really a bigger bond. It's a bigger impact than even family. Yeah, yeah. We can't choose family, but we can choose P2P. We can choose friends. And so that's why I'm so excited about this. And isn't it time for our hug right now? Yes, it is. Wendy, I want to hold your hand through our hug. Yay. I want you to just breathe in and just rejoice. Today is a day to rejoice that our friendships, that the relationships that we do choose, the relationships that nurture us, the relationships that affirm us, the relationships in which we can be ourselves. We don't have to be anybody else. We don't have to be pretentious, you know, of being what we are not. We can just be ourselves in it. Kind of like on Peter P, just come as you are. Those relationships turn out to be the best for us. So I just want you to luxuriate in that and just come into this P2P circle with me and just enjoy that and breathe out and just know that it will be okay. Wendy Talara, I just love you and I'm so excited that you're here today. AJ Mahari, you famous woman, you, welcome to Page to Pantry.
Thank you.
All the way from Canada. This is amazing. I know Wendy Talara wants to say hello to you.
Hi, AJ. I am thrilled to meet you on the air. This is fantastic.
Well, hi, Wendy. It's nice to meet you on the air, too.
Well, AJ, so Wendy's been quoting you nonstop, and she's been doing a lot of research on borderline personality disorder. And not just that, because, you know, she's had quite a few interesting relationships, and all of them were personality disorders. And Wendy actually got me research. Wendy, do you remember your research that you got me about the prevalence of personality disorders, where Wendy actually found this 2004 APA survey about young adults, where 1 in 5 young adults. You want to talk about that, Wendy?
Yes. That was actually publicized earlier this week. It emerged on the major news outlets as of December 1st. Then a recent study reporting that almost 1 in 5 young adults aged 19 to 25 has a personality disorder and an even higher personality abuse drugs and alcohol. Unfortunately, this appears to corroborate the estimated findings of the 2004 APA survey, which came up with similar numbers.
Now, APA is the American
Psychiatric Association.
And I know some of you are out there saying, well, don't they want everybody to have some sort of disorder? Don't they want everybody to be disordered so that they can be on some sort of medication? What's your take on this, AJ?
Well, actually, I certainly don't think that the American Psychiatric Association wants everyone to have a personality disorder, because I think that there are professionals out there, too, who are searching for what is healthy. But I think healthy is getting harder and harder to find. So I'm not really surprised by those findings, given the work that I do. Unfortunately, the society that we live in today, family breakdown and all the complications we go through, personality disorders are definitely on the rise.
Okay, so now, AJ, your take on it, specifically, we're dealing with borderline personality disorder, is that this disorder originated in early childhood. So this study was talking about young adults aged 19 to 25 or above 18 and all of that stuff. But you're saying that the genesis of the disorder goes way back even to infancy, to 2 years old.
Absolutely. That's the case in more cases than not. So the vast majority, I would say, that's the case. But the other thing that's interesting and developing now is that, and has been for a few years, is that, like, borderline personality disorder, for example, used to be something that wouldn't be diagnosed until somebody was, like, 19, 20 or older. But now, just with bipolar and other disorders, there's professionals are starting to note the signs and symptoms when they present and manifest enough, even in children now, children and teens. So it's kind of being recognized earlier and earlier, but it used to be thought that perhaps some of this behavior is just teenage, perhaps it's just, you know, going through this stage of life, adolescence, and they'll be okay later. But now I think they're realizing more and more, you know, that a lot of this does take place before the age of two. Emotional and psychological development is arrested. These people are going to have issues and problems, and the issues and problems do start in childhood and carry right on through to adulthood. So now they're recognizing it earlier and earlier.
So what is it really? What is this kind of abuse or relational fracture that happens that young in common terms? I mean, a child feels hurt maybe on a daily basis, or what is this? Does this have to be something that's really pathological on the point of, you know, from the point of view of the parents or the caregivers, what is this kind of abuse that leads to borderline personality disorder?
Well, that's a great question, because first of all, I would like to just point out that I'm not sure the exact statistics, but I think it's probably like almost 75% of people diagnosed with borderline personality disorder also report are suspected to have been sexually and or otherwise abused and neglected, okay? But that leaves 25% or so that don't have that history.
Is this across boys and girls? Both boys and girls?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the thing of it is, though, that what does happen somewhere, usually before the age of two and definitely between the age of two and three, is that the child experiences some kind of interruption in secure attachment and bonding with the parent or the mother specifically, usually. But I want to really make this point. I think it's important and not made enough. Sometimes this is a direct result of abuse. Sometimes a direct result of neglect and trauma. But often also, and this has been, it's not so publicized, it can be as simple as what's called affect synchrony, which really just means like a miscommunication in mirroring. So what we need as children, you know, in the back and forth to bond and attach to that, what they call object other, mother, that face, you know, when we're really little. Something can go wrong in that just because perhaps maybe a mother has postpartum depression, or a mother is depressed, or a mother, for whatever reason, she may have BPD herself and she may not be able to meet the child's mirroring needs. So sometimes there are terrific mothers out there who still end up with children who have borderline personality disorder, and it's not always their fault. I want to make that point.
So you're saying that it's not a biological problem. It's something that has gone on with the relationship part of the mother-child bonding process.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in a sense, that's what I believe. That's what many professionals believe. But there's also a community of professionals who want to or tend to forward that it's more like a brain disorder or more of a genetic thing. But it's commonly held that it's some kind of combination between genetics and environment, or nature and nurture. And so object relation professionals, which is what I really ascribe to as somebody who had BPD and recovered. It was my life experience. They're the ones that point to what they call object and relation theory. So it's all about this interpersonal relationship that ruptures or does not attach securely between the child and the mother. And again, for whatever reason, because sometimes parents do everything they can and this still happens. And sometimes, you know, like in my own case, I was sexually abused and I was abused, and so there was, you know, a lot of reason for how I ended up the way I did for a time in my life. But I think it's also important to realize that what happens when this rupture occurs, it is actually experienced as an abandonment, okay, which is very central to borderline personality disorder. And this abandonment creates shame. And so this experience of shame cannot be incorporated by a very young child. There's just no tools for that at such a young age. And so this is what really goes on throughout the course of borderline personality disorder, throughout the course of people's lives with BPD, is that they have shame they can't integrate into a self they've actually lost, and they've lost their authentic self. So then they try to live through other people. And this is largely why not only do those with borderline personality disorder suffer profoundly in the absence of the self, but anyone who gets close to them and tries to relate to them, like other family members, siblings, intimate partners, friends, because the borderline has no self, so they're trying to live through others. And that's what pulls people into the pathology in a way that they then start losing themselves as well. So I just like to say borderline personality disorder affects profoundly those who are diagnosed with it, but it also profoundly affects anyone close to those who are diagnosed with it.
AJ Mahari, the amazing thing about you is that you used to have borderline personality disorder.
Right.
You had both parents suffer from borderline personality disorder.
Yes.
You also had a relationship with someone who had borderline personality disorder.
Absolutely.
And you have gone through the healing process of borderline personality disorder.
Right, and sort of in all of those capacities, yes, as the child of borderlines, as someone who had it myself, and then as someone who had a partner who had it later on, yeah.
So it's not that you're a psychiatrist or an MD on this, but you're speaking from the firsthand experience in all of these different capacities. So that's a point that we want to make to everybody, but it's a valuable vantage point to speak from. Wendy, how did you know that your boyfriend had borderline personality disorder? Was he diagnosed, or how did you come upon this diagnosis? A lot of people don't know about it.
He was never formally diagnosed, and neither was my former partner, so I do not make any claims to be a psychiatrist or a psychological professional of any stripe. However, there was something that felt off in both relationships. Just something felt out of alignment, and I felt compelled to start looking things up online. I didn't really know what I was up against. I didn't know if it was just, well, maybe it's me. Maybe if I work harder in this relationship, it will get better. And there was just this tremendous shock and disillusionment process of tumbling down and realizing there's nothing I can do. There's no amount of work I can put into this, nothing that I can correct in myself, no amount of myself I could lose to make this relationship, either relationship, better.
Amazing. AJ, this idea of living through the other person, this idea, is it, you know, you talk about rage on the part of a person with borderline personality disorder, and you talk about living through the other person. Isn't that a dichotomy? First you're raging against them, or they're suffering for what you felt the person with borderline personality disorder went through as a child, and at the same time you need them to complete you. Is there that going on?
Oh, absolutely. And that's like what they commonly refer to as sort of like get away closer and I hate you, don't leave me. And it is like a total crazy-making thing, because it's like this person says to the person in their life, they say two things at once that don't match inconsistently back and forth. Like, I need you, I love you, I want you. I don't like you, I don't need you, I can't stand you. And it can switch from moment to moment.
Okay. Now, one interesting thing, because I have a listener who called and, you know, she kind of picked up on the thread of what I was saying before, that, you know, is the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, invested in having more people diagnosed as borderline personality disorder? And this listener called in and said, you know, what about overdiagnosing? Is that going on in this case? We've looked at in the past issues of ADHD and all of that stuff that tends to be overdiagnosed, you know, because they can get on Ritalin and all of this other stuff. And she's wondering if this is going on with borderline personality disorder. Before you answer that, AJ, the important thing is this show is dealing with the people who know that it's real, who know that this is going on and just want help to get out. And also people who know that this is what they have. On this show, we're going to try to identify, you know, what are the traits
that can really identify someone as having borderline personality disorder. What are the things that the other person sees? Because AJ, I know you mentioned that most of them are just not even aware of what they're doing. But just for this listener's sake, can you talk about this issue of, you know, is it something that is overdiagnosed? Does it fall into the category of overdiagnosed psychiatric conditions such as ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that's just overdiagnosed for insurance purposes? Or is this something that, you know, we really need to be taking care of and we need to be paying attention to because it's even larger than we think?
Oh, I agree. I think it's larger than we think. I think also, though, could be argued that sometimes it may seem like it's misdiagnosed, or I know many people who are diagnosed with borderline personality disorder sometimes suspect or wonder, are suspicious, well, hey, you know, is it that you can't figure out what's wrong with me, so this is it? Or some people look at borderline personality disorder as like a garbage dumping ground diagnosis for when they don't know what else is wrong. And to that end, I would say about that, that there's borderline personality disorder is definitely real. There is, however, also often other things, like comorbid things that go with it, like anxiety disorders and eating disorders and often narcissistic personality disorder or other personality disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder. So often there's elements of these things when someone's diagnosed with borderline personality disorder or full-blown other conditions that exist as well. So the one thing about this, though, is that so I guess what I'm trying to say is that when you say borderline personality disorder and then you look at what that actually means as the professionals describe it, it almost, it's almost like here it is, this is what it is, it's complex, and it's almost like we're describing something that is so vast, it isn't even exactly that.
So give me some pointers, for example, what are some of the traits that, you know, you should look for? What are some of the traits that someone should be able to recognize and say, oh my gosh, this is, you know, we're having 8 out of 10 of these traits showing up. We should take a closer look at borderline personality disorder as, you know, maybe a clue.
Well, I think that if I could just finish one point before I may answer that question. I was going to say in terms of it being overdiagnosed, I think that many would agree it is overdiagnosed in a way sometimes attributed to women often when there are probably more men who have it also. And then the men tend to get diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder far more so sometimes than the women who also perhaps sometimes would fit that. Now, to the traits, that's an interesting question. There is traits listed in the diagnostic statistic manual by the professionals that try to tell you what borderline personality is defined as, what it's defined as. And then there are sort of the traits and things that people would look for more commonly in life. But do you want me to just kind of quickly go through a few
traits?
Yes,
absolutely, absolutely, yes.
Okay, well, frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment. A pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation, like we mentioned before, you know, I hate you one minute, I love you the next. Identity disturbance, which can be persistent, unstable self-image and sense of self because borderlines really don't know who they are. They don't really have a sense of their goals or what they like or don't like or their values or ethics because they really don't know who they are. Impulsivity in at least two areas that are potentially self-damaging, like spending, sex, substance abuse, or binge eating. Recurrent suicidal behavior, gestures or threats, or self-mutilating behavior, self-harm, cutting, that type of thing. Affective instability, marked shifts from baseline mood to depression, irritability, anxiety, which can last for a few hours and sometimes rarely more than a few days. Number 7 on this list is chronic feelings of emptiness. And number 8 is inappropriate intense anger or difficulty controlling anger, frequent displays of temper. And I would like to add that some people with BPD will display their rage, anger, and temper through sort of an aloof, silent kind of punishment. It's not always outward rage. And the 9th thing they list is transient, stress-related, paranoid, ideation, or severe dissociative symptoms. So that's how it's described by the professionals.
And are they saying that some of these traits are what people have, or they generally have most of these traits?
Oh, actually, to be diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, the criteria is that a person would have 5 out of these 9 minimum.
Wendy, what was your experience?
AJ, I wanted to ask you a quick question. If you had to translate all of the diagnostic lingo into plain English for the rest of us, how would you attribute that?
That's a good question. I think that somebody who appears to be rather needy, inconsistent, who you can tell is kind of like abandonment fear can kind of be recognized by people, perhaps as, you know, something else. Somebody who wants to get to know you, feels like they know you after they've spoken to you for 10 minutes. Those are kind of red flags. Somebody who says, I love you after 2 or 3 days. Somebody who might exhibit wanting to control you, wanting to keep you away from your friends, wanting your attention all the time. Someone who can never be satisfied by anything you do for them. Somebody who presents almost as two different people, sort of like can be really loving and sensitive and seemingly generous and caring, and the next second, angry, demanding, abusive. And these things tend to show themselves, perhaps not in the exact way I just described, but there's always those red flags when you're getting to know someone. But often we get blinded to those because, you know, we're sort of wrapped up in getting to know the person. And like you said about when you started to get online to do research, you thought, you know, or is this just me? You know, there's that sense that as you get to know somebody, wow, this guy seems like this or like that, or is it just me? You know, that kind of thing.
Okay, Wendy, AJ. When I've been talking to both of you, I've gotten the sense of a self-absorption on the part of people with borderline personality disorder, a self-absorption with the event itself, with the relationship that had a rupture in it. And as we were talking earlier, AJ, you said perhaps that's why they can't really understand what's going on with you, because it's all about themselves. And maybe that's where that narcissism, that self-absorption comes in, because they're still living this pain as if it were today. It may have happened when they were 2 or 3, but to them it's present right this minute.
Well, absolutely, because what happens is, first of all, you know, people with borderline personality disorder are really living from a false self because they've lost that authentic self. And the false self is all about protecting themselves from what they've already experienced, that core wound of abandonment. So even if that's not what's happening in the here and now, they are suspicious of it, worried about it, terrified about it, and always looking for it. So they tend to find what they're looking for, whether it's real or not. And then what happens is, in relating to people in the here and now, they tend to get triggered by things. Like somebody might just not have, you know, seriously, it could be as bad as this, that you're sitting with a partner with BPD and you have to go to the washroom and you can't pay attention to them. It can be that bad, that they need attention that much of the time. So just
And then they say what? And then they say what? When you have to go to the washroom, they say what?
Well, they'll say, well, what about me? Like, I thought you cared about, so now you don't care about me because you got to go do that. Well, the heck with
you,
yada, 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 because they will feel abandoned by, this is an extreme example, but it can happen that just needing to go do something for yourself takes away from them. And what that really is about is that moment of the person going to the washroom to take care of themselves, the borderline might feel abandoned because they will be triggered back into a dissociative kind of frame of mind whereby they re-experience when they were abandoned mm-hmm. as a child.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what comes to mind to me is Ike Turner, from the way Tina Turner described their relationship. And, you know, when she would get all dressed up, it was always when she was ready to go on stage. And it was almost like she was punished for looking good. She was punished for doing all of the things that he wanted her to do. I want you to dance nice and rough. I want you to, you know, be extra sexy, and I want the dress to be short. But the same short dress and the sexy dance made him think, oh my God, the men are looking at you. I know you want those men in the audience. I know you think you're better than me. I know I'm not good enough for you, and all of those things. So she'd be beaten up constantly before she would go on stage. One other thing happened that kind of really stunned me. A number of years ago, I met a friend of my sister's, and he says, oh, I want you to come over to my house, and I want you to meet my family, etc. So we drove over to his house, and he went to the fridge, you know, to get a drink or whatever it was. And he says, who took the wine? And the sister says, oh, we had some of the wine. What? You took the wine? What? Oh my God, I can't believe this. You took the wine? I was going to give her that wine. I never got a chance to say I don't drink. Not on Monday, not on Tuesday, not on special occasions. Don't worry about it. I was trying to say this. I don't drink alcohol at all. It makes no difference whether the wine is open or unopened. I wouldn't drink it anyway. It's okay. He went on this rage was unbelievable. He kicked his sisters out of the house that night. It was freezing cold. He took the keys of the car. He says, where are you going? They said, we're going to buy you another bottle of wine. He goes, not with the car, you're not. He took the keys and he forced them to walk to the liquor store to go buy me a bottle of wine. Moi, that doesn't even drink. Me, that I came to meet his family and it was supposed to be a wonderful occasion. And I'm in the middle of this now. And they're walking in the dead of night to some liquor store. God forsaken, God knows where. Unbelievable. I have never been able to get over that situation. Now, here's the interesting part. This was a very, very well-respected PhD with a fancy position in one of the fancy aerospace position companies. And he had this wonderful mansion so many rooms and just a great estate. And so his family lived there with him and this and that and the other. And this was the reality that they had to go through every day. I was just stunned. I want you and Wendy, AJ, to talk about this kind of thing. Is this the kind of reality that people have to deal with when they're dealing with people with borderline personality disorder?
Unfortunately, all the time. It can be a little more subtle. It can be actually a little more physically violent, but it is invariably emotionally and verbally violent. That's the kind of abuse. AJ, my question for you, can these people help? Can they help but be anything but abusive? I mean, is this inherently just part of the disorder?
Well, when you say, can they help it, or can they help being that way, I think that's a two-sided question. On the one hand, no, in the sense that they are getting triggered to dysregulated emotion and they are sort of dissociating and going back to something that then gets thrust into the situation in the here and now. So in that sense, there's something really that's part of the disorder. However, having said that, there are ways with professional help to gain insight into that and to learn how to, you know, regulate those emotions and not do that. So I would say at the same time that they sort of can't help that, they must be held responsible for that so that it's not okay to excuse that.
And how does one call them on their behavior without triggering them further? And the other question that came to mind is, since there is this overlay on the present in which the past is being projected over and over and over, what breaks or cracks through that facade? What is it on the inside of a borderline? I mean, I know that you can't speak for all borderlines or people who aren't even aware that they are behaving in this fashion, but what cracks through the facade? Does anything ever crack that?
Well, that is a fascinating and wonderfully insightful question. What the only thing, in my opinion, as somebody, you know, who went there and had to crack that facade in myself, in my opinion, the only thing that can really crack that is wanting, firstly realizing there's something wrong, the person with BPD themselves, and going to therapy and wanting to do the work. And it means having to face a heck of a lot of pain to crack the facade of the false self to be able to then reconnect to the lost authentic self. And seriously, there is no way that the relationship partner, the family member, the mother, the brother, the sister, or whatever, somebody with borderline personality disorder, can help them do that.
You cannot help, is the message. Don't try to heal it. Don't try to be better, is what you're saying, AJ. Don't try to be less of yourself. Don't try to be sweeter, sexier, funnier, whatever. You can't help it. Only they can get to that point where they want to heal. Is that what you're saying?
You know, absolutely, and the way you put that is really right on, because the thing is that, you know, people with BPD tend to kind of throw out hopes, in a sense. It's kind of like, well, you know, if you'd have just done this, if you'd have just done that, or kind of like what you were saying. And the truth of that is that people with borderline personality disorder, with this core wound of abandonment and its attached shame, that they have to work out with in professional therapy, and that's the only way. They cannot be satiated. That means that nothing will ever be good enough for them. And if it's good enough on a Tuesday at 10 in the morning, it's probably not going to be good enough Tuesday at 10:20.
Amazing. You're on Page to Pantry with Nikki Gallucci. You're on with Wendy Talaro. You're on with AJ Mahari. And we're speaking and talking and discussing and having this fantastic conversation about borderline personality disorder. What is it? Who goes through it? The madness of it all. The fact that a lot of very intelligent people have this disorder. A lot of very intelligent others are in relationships with them, and it's a screwed up world. Hey, but we're going to figure it out together. We're going to take a quick break, I believe, and we shall come right back on Page to Pantry.
Hi, this is Aradhavanjan of the Element Band. On Wednesday, December 10th, the world will celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and Amnesty International will commemorate this day with live performances during the Amnesty International Small Places Tour. All are invited to celebrate with live performances by Element Band, Gore, Elone, and Maria Armudian. On Wednesday, December 10th at 7 p.m., at the Sidebar in Glendale, located at 1114 North Pacific Avenue in Glendale. For ticket information, go to kpfk.org and click on the events calendar. That's the Amnesty International Small Places Tour on Wednesday, December 10th at 7 p.m. See kpfk.org for details. KPFK is a proud media sponsor.
Hey, everybody. How are you? Welcome back to Page to Pantry. Erica and Nathan, you know I'm going to get to your questions, sweethearts. Just hang on there. Yes, for those of you who want to make sure that you get on the queue and get heard today, and you want to speak to Wendy Talaro, or you want to speak to AJ Mahari, 818-985-5735 is the number right here at KPFK. All right. So I want to just talk about this intelligence factor, because it seems to be a very big clue to this. And AJ, I want you to speak on this. Wendy, you are an ecological designer. You have an MA. You specialize in gardens, integrating edibles and this and that and the other. You know, college educated, went to, you know, to the master's level and all of that stuff. We have a lot of listeners, both those who called in and those who wrote, professional people, people who, you know, highly educated, and you find yourself in this situation. What it tells me is, this is confusing. What does it tell you, Wendy? What do you make of it? The fact that, you know, Wendy, in your case, you actually had nationally recognized partners who were just absolutely adored out there by everybody, okay? Where you, everybody thought, gee, how lucky you are to be dating this person. Oh, my gosh, you're just the luckiest girl in the entire world. And you are accomplished in, you know, in your own right, and you find yourself in that situation. What do you make of that before we go to AJ's perspective on that?
Well, technically speaking, one of whom is actually internationally known as a writer, speaker, lecturer, and journalist, and the other is more of a local activist and instructor. The former, more of a political activist, the latter, more of an ecological and sustainability activist. And the only thing that I can make of it is that there is something within me that is drawing these people to me, and part of my journey has been to find out, where are those holes? What is it within me that needs addressed, that I am attracting unhealthy relationships?
AJ, what is it within people with borderline personality disorder that they want to pick the creme de la creme? They seem to go to people who are very accomplished themselves, and then they want to break them down. What's with that?
Yeah, well, you know, that has all to do, I think, also with how they sometimes go back to the past, in the sense of seeing that person in the here and now. Instead of seeing the person in the here and now for the accomplished and wonderful person they are, they will superimpose the past, the parent with whom the abandonment and the shame and the rupture of attachment happened, and then that starts to break that down. It's wanting to have a sense of power and control, really, over the past. But unfortunately, that gets played out onto the person in the here and now. And I would just like to also say that people with borderline personality disorder, and often narcissistic personality disorder, they're like chameleons because they really don't have like a container of self that is consistent and constant and healthy. And so it's kind of like emotional shape-shifting, if you will. They kind of just try to be who you want them to be so they can get you where they want you to be. And then, unfortunately, this superimposition of the past comes up in the relationships, and the person who is there trying to love that person becomes often the victim.
I want you to explain again, AJ, what they want from you. They're using you as the self that they don't have, right? Is
yes,
it the authentic
exactly.
self, or is it it's the authentic self, right?
Yes.
So what do they want you to do?
It's two things, really. It's like they need the container for the missing self that they don't have. So they try to they live through others that way, and they're defined through others. That's why if you let them down, it's such like a huge deal, because it's like they've lost themselves then. And also, it's the living through someone else, and then that someone else taking on the identity of the mother in the past or the person with whom the relationship ruptured. So it's those two things, sometimes simultaneously, sometimes rotating back.
So the abuser, the abused becoming the abuser while you are them, and you being controlled by them so that you can do everything that they need to do themselves. But the only problem is you can never do it just right.
Well, right. And the other thing about it for those who are in relationship to somebody with borderline personality disorder is that you truly aren't being seen and experienced. You aren't visible for who you really are. And that's like a really dehumanizing experience. And that is part of how people in these relationships, called non-borderlines, for lack of a better way to put it, who are relating to people with BPD, that's how they start to have their self-esteem and self-confidence and sense of self eroded slowly over time, to the point for many people where they kind of lose themselves. And I really believe, as I talk about my ebooks, my audio program, that people who are in relationship to people with borderline personality disorder also need their own recovery, because they do kind of experience sort of like a pathological wounding by proxy, if you will, or by association.
That's excellent. AJ, you mentioned the ebooks. And the amazing thing, you guys, today is that AJ really is giving away her ebooks to people. Which one are you giving away today, AJ?
Oh, yeah, they have such long names, it's hard for me to remember. It's Understanding Borderline Personality Disorder, The Lost Self, The Impact of the Core Wound of Abandonment.
And this is just the one book, right?
Yeah, it's only one of 14 that I've
A prolific writer. We can see that. This topic is just unbelievable. Understanding Borderline Personality Disorder. It is an ebook. And AJ will give it to 10 lucky listeners who either call in or write me, and I will give my email away at the end of the show. And then I will send your email address to AJ, and she will email you the ebook. See how it goes? Very, very cool. All right, I'm going to give out the number 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. So you can be one of those people that get Understanding Borderline Personality Disorder. And of course, the subtitle is The Lost Self, The Impact of the Core Wound of Abandonment, etc., etc. I want to go to the lines. Erica, how you doing? Welcome to Page to Pantry. You're on line 4. You've been waiting so patiently. Thank you so much, Erica. What's up?
Hi. How are you guys doing tonight?
Excellent.
Doing well.
What's up?
I'm calling because I kind of have a comment and a question. I'm calling because I was actually misdiagnosed for borderline personality disorder, and it took me a long time to kind of recover because my therapist had my entire family convinced that I had this big problem, and I had to go to therapy on my own and discover through another therapist that this other therapist was wrong. So,
did you have anything at all, or the other therapist said, you're perfectly fine?
No, I think it was what she said about the dumping ground, something about the borderline personality disorder kind of being a dumping ground for people. They weren't really sure what was wrong with me. My mom actually had a bipolar disorder, and so she was extremely controlling. So a lot of the behaviors I had when I was a kid were misdiagnosed for you know, either anxiety or depression, which, you know, I found out in hindsight that they were really just a reaction to the strange and serious behaviors of my mother and not being on medication and not getting therapy herself. So I guess I just kind of wanted to throw that out there and wondering what AJ thought about that.
Well, I think that, you know, it's interesting when you mention that, because something that also isn't kind of talked about enough is that, you see, now your mother having bipolar disorder might have impacted her emotionally in ways that just meant that, you know, she wasn't able to give you everything you needed when you were younger, which might have caused you some difficulty and difficulty in the relationship between the two of you, which, again, would not be something she would have done on purpose. But this is an example of how things can go wrong in the attachment and bonding, and then later on you develop, you know, your own issues of having BPD. And I would just like to also say,
but she's saying that she didn't, though. AJ, she's saying that she didn't have BPD. That one therapist said that no, you don't have BPD. You have other issues relating to your mother having bipolar, and you're trying to survive that, but it's not BPD, right, Erica?
Yeah, that's what
happened. Oh, I see. I'm sorry, because it was hard to hear that.
Oh,
well,
no, it's okay.
It's interesting, because I guess there are people also out there who have some of the traits of borderline personality disorder, but perhaps not enough to be diagnosed. So some people will struggle with, like, say, maybe abandonment or a couple of those issues, but not have the full-blown personality disorder.
Yes. Erica, I just want to say that, you know, my hat's off to you, because regardless of what you had to deal with your mother, the fact that you came through this kind of relationship with someone who had a psychiatric disorder, you know, a bipolar disorder, it's just testament to your strength that you've been able to survive that. Regardless of what she had and you have, there's a huge problem here that you had to deal with, and you had to deal with at a time when people don't have a lot of tools to deal with these kinds of situations. They're bigger than the child, and a lot of times the child might end up blaming themselves for how mom is acting and all that, and they're blamed and all of that stuff. So regardless of what the name of what you had or what you went through something huge, and the work that you did, I want to commend you for it. And I want to thank you for calling in, because that's the importance of a book like this, Understanding Borderline Disorder. Do you have it? Does she have it? Is it other stuff? You know, and I think that's what's valuable about what we're doing today. And Erica, if you want a book, or if you feel like, hey, I got it under control, I want to thank you for being on Page to Pantry and come back and hang out with us again. Nathan, you're in line 5. Welcome to P2P. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. What's up?
I would like to speak to something, the same thing that Erica spoke to. My wife was also misdiagnosed. She went to a psychiatrist, and she said after the first visit, she went in and talked to him, and he said that she was a classic borderline case. And first of all, I don't think that it's that easy to read in someone. And so I went out and bought Walking on Eggshells, and went down the checklist, and she had about 8 to 10 of them, of, you know, so I'm like, she's classic, right? But, you know.
What was your experience, Nathan, with your wife? Did you feel like there's something wrong in this relationship? How did she go to the psychiatrist in the first instance? Was it because she was having issues with you? Is it because you thought, something's not right here, dear, you have to go to the psychiatrist? What led to that first visit to the psychiatrist?
Well, it was a long period of time of us dealing with, you know, trying to communicate and me still walking on eggshells. It was exactly the classic case of, I can't do anything right. You know, she was afraid of anything, a fear of abandonment, all that stuff, self-mutilation, drug and alcohol abuse, all of that. And what eventually came down to was that she had a problem with alcohol. She and drugs, and going through rehab, I took her to rehab, and she dealt with those issues, and all that other stuff fell away. I mean, she coupled that, she still goes to counseling, and she does AA and all that, and those are the tools that have helped her deal with her own issues, but realizing that it is not a borderline case, and it's not that easy. That's my point, is that...
Did the book help you?
Book.
Did the book help you that
Check
you bought?
Out. I felt like it did at the time, but going through it, it made me feel like I had a concrete hold on what was going on in my life and her life.
Mm-hmm.
But until we went through counseling and did that together, and she dealt with her own issues, was how it got better. She's been clean for 2 years, and a lot of those abandonment things, I went to Al-Anon myself and got some tools to deal with how to deal with someone who has issues.
Interesting.
Granted, alcoholism wasn't her only issue.
Yes. Wendy, in this situation, not Wendy, AJ, I keep mixing both of you. AJ, in this situation where, what Nathan is describing is kind of what you're talking about, where there are other issues that are going on at the same time. So you have the drug abuse, you have the alcoholism, you have, the psychiatric issues, and you have everything happening at once. And what do you make of that in terms of, what do you handle first? In Nathan's case, he's thinking that the Al-Anon, the Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of that stuff helped more. But he talks about therapy, and of course, we don't know what issues she discovered in the therapy. But isn't it interesting that a lot of times the alcohol abuse and the drug abuse is kind of self-medicating what the root cause is, and is the whole point of this that you have to get to the bottom of what the problem is, what the psychological problem or the psychiatric problem is, and whether you're medicating with alcohol or drugs or whether you're taking it out on your spouse, that is the work that needs to be done? What do you have to say about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, many people abuse drugs and alcohol and self-harm because they're trying to avoid pain. And sometimes they don't really have a sense of what that pain is about. And often that's the case with borderline personality disorder because the pain is that abandonment pain from so long ago. And I would just like to say that, I can't really speak to whether his wife was misdiagnosed or not, because sometimes the label seems to fit more closely than not for others. But the point is that a lot of the things like abusing alcohol and drugs and self-harm are part of what goes on with borderline personality disorder. But the important thing is, getting clean and sober and dealing with those issues and getting therapy, whether or not she had borderline personality disorder is definitely going to make life better and make for a healthier situation.
Yeah, so regardless of what the end label ends up being, like Nathan, he had to read a book on walking on eggshells, which is what he was experiencing. No matter what the end label ends up being, understanding these disorders is the first step towards doing something about it and getting back to a healthier relationship. Nathan, if you want one of these books, you can write me and I'll give my address at the end. I want to speak to Rudy on line 7. Rudy, welcome to Page to Pantry. How are you?
Oh, okay. I have a question. I was wondering, what do people with borderline personality disorder, what do they have to expect after getting treatment? What do they have to look forward to as far as personality changes, that kind of thing?
Oh, that's a really good question because, I'm somebody who had borderline personality disorder and I did recover. And what there is to look forward to, even during treatment and after treatment, is, finding out who you really are and knowing yourself better, learning how to manage your emotions and how to relate to people in ways that can create successful relationships and more healthy situations and non-abusive relating, and just a much better life, just understanding sort of, not to get too high about the highs in life and not too low about the lows, and just kind of living averagely, like average mentally healthy people do. So, it's a journey that I would say to anybody with borderline personality disorder, it is well worth taking. It is a way to take what is unbearable suffering, turn it into manageable pain, and then down the road really kind of just create, find some peace and find some happiness in life.
It's interesting that you talk about pain. You talk about the aversion to pain because the pain of abandonment to them is just so real. But at the same time, you talk about the necessity of going through pain to find out who they really are and find out, that they can survive this thing that happened to them. And also then being able to manage the pain so that it is normal. And what this kind of sets up for me is a situation where you don't want to deaden that emotion. You don't want to medicate it out of them. You don't want to make them a dull, lifeless person, whether it's through alcohol or drugs or any kind of pharmaceutical that might, deaden their feelings. So I think that the play between pharmaceuticals and therapy has to be really well managed so that they're still able to feel and still able to go through that. Is that what you're saying, AJ?
Well, absolutely, except that in many cases with people with borderline personality disorder, there's a period of time until they've had a certain amount of therapy where they have to learn in therapy to tolerate the distress of the pain, the discomfort, the anxiety, and those kind of things, where there may be some, you know, medication involved or that type of thing. But because it's a process to learn how to tolerate the distress and radically accept it so that you can then go about continuing the process of finding a healthy expression for that pain and that grief. And I'd just like to also say that it's important to know that, you know, when we're talking about this, that it's important to have compassion for those who have borderline personality disorder because, you know, they truly are suffering. But I would also just like to say to those who are family members and maybe relationship partners of people with these personality disorders who are suffering, that as important as it is to have compassion for them, compassion without boundaries and self-care is the self-sacrifice that gets so many into so much trouble.
And so you don't recommend that self-sacrifice. You recommend compassion from a distance and letting them and praying for them, if you need to get the help that they need, as opposed to being the sacrificial lamb for this disorder.
Well, yes, and what that means really is compassion with accountability and also the knowledge that if you think you can rescue, save, or change somebody with borderline personality disorder, that's really an illusion. And I know people do it and are often trapped in thinking that they can help someone because they love them and they care about them. And it's really, really heart-wrenching. It's a heart-wrenching place to be. It's an absolute no-win place to be.
All right. Understanding Borderline Personality Disorder. We've been on with AJ Mahari, author, sufferer, the whole works. She's been there, family member of people with it. We've been on with Wendy Talaro, a P2P posse member who has lived it with someone who has this disorder. My email is ngaluchi. It's always twice about you, once about I, NGULUCHI at lavidamed.com. Don't fret. Go to the KPFK website or go to pagetopantry.com. You will find my email address there. Everybody who couldn't get on the line today, you may write me your questions. AJ Mahari and Wendy Talaro are coming back next week, y'all. We're going to give away another set of ebooks next week. All is not lost. Hey, let's keep this going. Sweetheart, we're going to get through this situation. We're going to find the light at the end of the tunnel. And wow, how sweet will that be? You're on with Nikki Gallucci, and I want to see you back here 1 p.m. on The Money. Ciao.
You've been listening to Page to Pantry on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara. You can join us tomorrow morning for a special edition of Sprouts with a tribute to Utah Phillips featuring interviews and music from this folk singer and storyteller and railroad tramp. That's tomorrow morning at 6. Stay tuned for Healthy Planet, Healthy Me with Sherry Beal up next.
It's a difficult new car market right now, but the demand for donated vehicles has not diminished. Your car, truck, RV, or motorcycle donation to KPFK can help us with the revenue we need to continue to provide you with the quality programming you expect. Just call our vehicle donation line at 877-KPFK-AUTO or donate online at kpfk.org, and we'll handle everything from the pickup and sale of your vehicle to providing you with your tax paperwork. Please donate today at 877-KPFK-AUTO or online at kpfk.org and click Pledge Support.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with me.
Who?
Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Come on, man. Open up. I think the cops are
coming. Dave's not here.
Dave's still not here. But you know who will be here this Friday at 4 o'clock on KPFK 90.7 FM?